We're continuing our preaching series. We're doing Shine and Sow, which if you've been around for the last few weeks is picking up on the idea of how do we tell people about Jesus effectively? How do we help people come to know Jesus? And we've done it in two bits, and we've done it in this kind of idea of shine and sow. Shine is the idea that we live a visible, God-centered life to people so that actually we're not just telling them something, we're showing them something, and they can see what a life looks like with Jesus. And hopefully, to many people, that's an attractive as well as a useful thing. And that's the shine bit. Al talked about that last week, and that is on the website and the podcast and download if you missed it. What I'm going to talk about this week is the other half of it, because they go together. It doesn't work just one or the other. If we just live these kind of wonderful, appealing lives, everyone just thinks, well, they're great people, aren't they? They're really nice, they're really together. But it doesn't really help anybody find out about Jesus unless we do the other half, which is sowing, which is where we need to kind of introduce people to Jesus, talk about little Jesus a bit, help people kind of get pointed to Jesus as the reason why our lives are the way we are. So last week was shining, this week is sowing, and I'm going to do it from Matthew chapter 13, where it's what's called the parable of the sower. I'll just get the glasses out so I can read it. I'm so blind without these. I was really jealous when Jeff was flicking through his Bible, going, where is it? I was thinking, how can he read it without glasses? But some people have not got to that stage yet, have they? No one said it was fair. Matthew 13, here we go. Let's just get on with it. Matthew 13. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered round him that he got into a boat and sat in it while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let him hear. We're very fortunate. This is one of the few parables that Jesus really actually unpacks for us in detail. And so we're going to jump ahead a few verses where Jesus explains. The disciples say, we didn't understand it. Jesus explains it to us. So we're going to do that as well. To get really the idea behind it. Now, if you're familiar with this, if you've been around church a while, you'll probably, I know this one, I know what it all stands for. If you're new, you might have a good guess. If you've never heard it before, I don't know. Let's see what we find out. So we jump ahead to verses 18, where Jesus says, listen then to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop, yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. Fortunately, Jesus unpacks it for us. And what I want to do is kind of go through the parable in a bit, help us to make sure we've really grasped what he's saying, and then kind of talk about what it means for us in this context of shining and sowing and kind of trying to introduce people to Jesus. So let's unpack the parable first of all. Essentially, to work out what's going on, we've got seed and we've got four different types of soil. It's an old school kind of first century method of farming, which essentially means taking handfuls of seed and throwing it around the area, and then it springs up and you kind of look after it and that sort of thing. Different to our modern agricultural kind of thing. Jesus tells us, fortunately, what all of the aspects of this parable are. He tells us that the seed, he talks about it in verse 18, he says it's the message of the kingdom. And then in subsequent verses, he talks about it being the word that was sown. In other words, what Jesus is saying is the seed represents information that we tell people about Jesus. If you've been around church a while, you might want to call it the gospel. If you've not been around church a while, you might want to think of it as stuff about Jesus. What the seed represents is any time someone is told about Jesus in any kind of way. And the gospel is more than just an invitation. Again, if one of the downsides, if you've been around church a while, is you're used to perhaps thinking of the gospel as an invitation. Would you like to come to know Jesus? But that's not really what he's saying. He's not saying anyone hears an invitation. He's saying anyone who hears the word, anyone who hears the message of the kingdom. And this encompasses the whole picture about who Jesus is and what he's done. The gospel covers Jesus as the Son of God, eternally God, coming to earth as a human being and living a life as a genuine human being facing the same trials and temptations that we face. The gospel covers Jesus' life lived perfectly before God in our place to do what we could never do, to live a good enough, holy, righteous life that satisfies God's requirements, to fully love God and to love people in a way that we'll never manage to attain in this life. The gospel covers Jesus' death on the cross, where he was executed by the Roman authorities, outwardly a symbol of kind of repressing Jewish sedition, but the Bible tells us inwardly it was Jesus taking the judgment for our sin and our guilt and our failings and our rebellion against God to bridge the gap, to bring us back to God, to allow us to know him again. The gospel encompasses Jesus' resurrection from the dead, demonstrating that the price has been paid, demonstrating that the final word is not judgment, but new life and forgiveness and resurrection. The gospel encompasses Jesus being taken back up to heaven to be with God forever, eternally, on our behalf, representing us. And the gospel includes the Holy Spirit being poured out on everybody who puts their faith in Jesus, receiving God himself into our lives to transform us, to help us shine. And the gospel includes the fact that Jesus says he's coming back one day, we don't know when, to wrap things up and to bring in a whole new creation. And for those that have connected with Jesus, there's going to be life and joy and eternity. For those who have held God at a distance and rejected Jesus, there's going to be judgment. That's the whole gospel. And we receive what Jesus has done for us. We respond to the gospel in one of two ways. We respond either by saying, not interested, not for me, don't believe, don't want to believe, and just keeping it back. Or we respond, the Bible talks about repentance and faith, which means saying, actually, I have not done it right before God. I'm going to change the way I think and the way I live to reconnect with God. And I'm going to put my faith and my trust in Jesus to bring me to God instead of my own religious achievements or moral achievements. You could call it, if you wanted to put it in different words other than repent and believe, you could call it turn and trust. It's turning away from an old life and trusting that Jesus is life and death and resurrection reconnects us to God. That's the gospel. And any part of that, when we're talking and sharing with people, we're sharing the word, we're sowing the seed. That's all part of it. It's not just the gospel when we say, would you like to know God through Jesus? It's the whole big picture. So that's the seed. Happy with that? Yeah? Let's look at the four types of soil. I've got a graphic here. I didn't make it up. I ripped it off the internet and slightly adjusted it, but it serves the purpose well. Jesus actually goes through these four types of soil to help us understand what they represent. Now, the key thing about this parable is all four types of soil receive the same seed. The seed just comes out, and what happens depends on where it lands. And Jesus is saying this parable is about how we respond to the message of Jesus, how we react to what we hear of the gospel. And Jesus is spelling out four different ways that people respond. The first one is the seed that falls on the path, just a kind of hard packed ground, birds come, take it away. Nothing happens to it at all. This, Jesus is telling us, is people who hear about Jesus and are not interested. These are people who don't make a response of faith, who don't turn and trust. These are people who ignore the gospel. These are people who reject the gospel. These are people who don't want anything to do with Jesus. These are people who don't believe that Jesus existed or don't believe that Jesus was the Son of God, came to earth, who don't believe he died or rose from the dead. This is people who is a blanket no to the gospel. A no to Jesus. And some of us here, that's you. you know, you're here because you're kind of looking in or you're interested or someone's invited you, but you know that you are saying no to Jesus at the moment. If it's not you and you're a believer and you put your faith in Jesus, you know loads of people like this, don't you? You know loads of people who are not interested. Just no thanks to Jesus. That's the first type of soil we've got. The second one we get a bit harder. This is the seed that falls on rocky soil. In other words, kind of, it's basically rock. Maybe there's a thin layer of something on top of it, just enough for a bit of germination to happen. And Jesus says what happens is the seed falls here, springs up, but then the sun comes out and there's no root and it just withers and dies. It's a brief aberration. These are people who temporarily respond to the gospel. These are people who kind of make a response, but it doesn't last. Jesus will tell us these are people that have never actually turned and trusted, repented and believed. This is a shallow, insufficient, surface response to the gospel. And we know that because he says the sun came down, they withered because they had no root. There was nothing that had actually taken hold of people's lives that said, I am going to work this out and live it out for the rest of my days. It's a brief response to the gospel. These may be people who like the idea and the benefits of Jesus, but don't really like the idea of the cost of following Jesus. These might be people who think, oh, that will make my life better, and respond to Jesus, but it doesn't make it that much better, so maybe I'll get involved in this instead. Maybe you're here this morning, and you know that's you. You've made a kind of response to Jesus, and it hasn't really come to anything, and for whatever reason you're here today, maybe someone's brought you, invited you, I don't know. You may feel that's you. If that isn't you and you're sitting here and you're thinking, no, I'm going on with God, I bet you know people like this, don't you? The people spring into mind. You think, yep, them. And this is one of the hard things about the parable of the sower. And Jesus says many things that are hard for us to hear and difficult. And one of them is this. Not every response to Jesus and the gospel is genuine. Not every response to Jesus and the gospel leads to someone coming to know God. There are people who kind of partly respond, temporarily respond, but it's never really taken hold in their life. And this is the seed that falls on the rocks. There's no root at the end of the day. The third one is the thorns, the seed that falls among the thorns. This is a different scenario to the rocks, but it looks very similar. It talks about a seed that falls in a place where there's lots of thorns, brambles, whatever you want them to be, and it kind of does grow up, but the environment around it means it's not flourishing, it's not blossoming, it's kind of stunted, it's struggling to get there. There's all sorts of competing things, competing for light and nutrients and air and space, which means this kind of wheat never grows into what it's really fully capable of being. Maybe it's just a kind of a scraggly ear with a few bits on it. And what does this represent? Well, Jesus again tells us what it represents. This is people who hear the word, but then the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth come in and choke it, making it unfruitful. What does this stand for? This stands for someone who makes a genuine response to Jesus, a genuine response to the gospel, but for whatever reason, just struggles to really make a great go of it. This is someone who finds it difficult to live for Jesus. And it may be kind of all sorts of other things making it hard to put Jesus first and central. There may well be repeated moments of kind of, oh, Lord, I really want to do it right. And then it just kind of goes off track again. These are perhaps Christians that never really fully grow to maturity. Do you remember we talked a few weeks ago about the kind of the journey of discipleship that you need to come to know Jesus, to become a Christian, to get saved? Then you need to go on and keep growing and get the hang of the basics, how the kind of basic Christian life works. But then Jesus is looking for us to grow on to maturity, to move on to a point where actually we've kind of got the hang of this. Not perfection, not a kind of a creepy, weird religiosity, but we're kind of blossoming and flourishing in what God's got for us. This seed that falls amongst the thorns is people that are just not in that place. They're struggling. And again, this may be you. You may be sitting here thinking, bang on, that's me. I keep trying, I keep having new starts. I've never really pushed through. I feel that stuff is just choking my faith, choking my joy in God, choking my life for God. I keep getting caught up in things I shouldn't. It may well be you. If it's not you, I bet you know people like that. And this is the time, don't move or move your eyes. Don't flick across to the people near you. Oh, but you know people like that, don't you? You may feel that that is you. What I want to say on this one is we've got to be really careful not to over-push the metaphor, the analogy, the parable. Because this is not about circumstances, this is about choices. What you could do is you could hear this parable and you could say, that is me. Life just crowds in around me. I'm just constantly taking blows and struggling and situation and circumstances just are squashing me in. That's not what Jesus is saying. He doesn't say the things that happen in your life stunt your Christian growth. He says the cares of this life, the worries of this life, and the deceitfulness of wealth choke it, making unfruitful. He's not saying the circumstances make it hard for you to live for God. He's saying the way you respond to those circumstances make it hard for you to live for God. Do you see the difference between those? Yeah? One is, there's nothing I can do about it. Things keep going wrong for me. The other one is, no matter what happens, I'm going to keep my eyes on Jesus and keep trying to live a God-centered life, keep trying to worship him, keep trying to put him forward, keep trying to grow through the thorns and thistles, if you like, into the open space and the open air. So that's number three, the thorns. Happy with that one? Last one, everybody's favorite, the good soil. The seed falls on good soil, it springs up, it produces 100, 60, 30 times. In other words, this is the seed that, you know, a little ear of wheat falls in, grows up, and it's got a great big kind of head of corn on it, loads more seeds on it. And obviously in the analogy, there'd be loads of other ones around it as well. And you think, oh, this is worth harvesting. This is worth kind of reaping in. This is where the seed has really worked. It's hit the spot. And this is people, Jesus tells us again, this is people who hear the word and understand it and go on to produce a crop. This is people who give their lives to Jesus, turn and trust, repent and believe, respond to the gospel, and keep Jesus central. They understand what this is all about. It's not just a ticket to heaven, and it's not just a license to get away with stuff, kind of a vaccine for sin. They understand this is everything. This is Jesus coming into my life and being part of everything I do. And they thrive and they flourish despite the circumstances, despite the knocks, despite the difficulties, despite the baggage that we all carry around, despite the temptations and the chains. These are people who flourish and go on in God. These are people who go on the kind of journey of discipleship from becoming a Christian to getting the hang of the basics and are moving into maturity. And are kind of not perfect, but are like, yeah, this is kind of working. This is a shining life. This is the kind of life that other people think that works for you. You seem to have a peace about you. You seem to have a stability about you. You seem to be able to cope with difficulties and setbacks well. You seem to have a kind of peace even when things are difficult. And again, there's some of us here. I suspect some of you are sitting there thinking, yeah, I'm not being funny, not being big-headed. I think I'm kind of doing that. You probably are. It's not an unattainable goal. Jesus says this is what happens. Seed falls on good soil. And people thrive and flourish in God. It's not without difficulties, it's not without problems, you're not perfect. But there's a kind of a growth, there's a maturity, there's a flourishing, there's a producing a crop about you. And those are the four kinds of soil. And if you think that's not me, you probably know some people who are. But what you don't get into is the thinking, oh, I could never be like them. Because the big trap about this parable is to mishear what Jesus is saying. What he's telling us is these are four ways that people respond to the gospel. These are four ways that people respond to the message about Jesus. What these are not, though, and this is where the analogy breaks down, these are not permanent fixed personality types. It's not that you were born a rocky soil, or you were born a thorny soil, or a good soil, or a path. That's not what Jesus is saying. Because obviously soil can't choose, can't transform. It's a metaphor, it's an analogy, it's a parable. What this is saying is these are four ways people respond to Jesus. I think it's perfectly possible for one person to be all four of those types of soil at different times in their life. Now you have to put them in a certain order to make that work, because you've got to go from being the rocky soil to someone who then makes a real commitment to Jesus later on. And I'm willing to bet that most of us here have been at least two types of soil, if not three, as we go through our lives. So it's not a fixed, unchanging thing. It's talking about where are you now? How are you responding now to Jesus? And what does your life look like? So we're not blocking people in. It's about choices. The other thing that's worth saying, we've got to be careful, is number two and number three, the rocks and the thorns, look really similar. The way I described them, you could think, well, I know someone, and are they rocky or are they thorns? They don't look like they're very fruitful for God. They don't even really like they're doing much for God, but they did make a commitment of faith. And how do we decide between rocks and thorns? Well, the first point is obviously we don't have to. We're not giving out badges here or certificates, are we? But it's helpful to kind of think these things through. I would say the big difference between the rocks and the thorns is, does it last? Does it go on? There's a world of difference between someone who makes a kind of commitment of faith to Jesus, and then after a while they just kind of drift away and it comes to nothing. Jesus talks about troubles or persecutions coming in. In other words, when it gets hard, when it gets difficult, and people disappearing, and people who are amongst the thorns and who are struggling, but are still there, but are still going, but are still reaching for the sky, but are still trying to go. And if you're sitting here thinking, crumbs, which one am I? Am I the path, never made a real commitment to Jesus, or am I the thorns? The answer is usually time. Are you still here? Are you still going? Maybe difficult, might be finding it hard. Are you still going with Jesus? If you're trying to think of people that you know and think, are they ever really Christians, or are they just Christians who are struggling? Again, the key thing is time. What happens over time? Is it like they wither and there's just no root, there's nothing there? It was a kind of a phase in their life 10 years ago? Or is it, now they're having difficulties, but they're still trying to grow. They're still trying to reach forward. They're still trying to put Jesus first. So the big difference is staying power, perseverance, as the Bible talks about it. Do you keep going with Jesus? Because ultimately we are not reconnected with God. We're not saved. We're not accepted by grace or forgiven or become Christians because of our own goodness or our own trying hardness. It's because of Jesus' goodness and Jesus' achievements. But in order to benefit from those, we need to keep looking to Jesus rather than I've kind of had the vaccine and now I can just forget it forever. That's how I think we think about the differences between two and three. Last thing I wanted to ask you is, what's missing from up here? Four types of soil. Jesus has missed one out, hasn't he? What's not there? We've got the people who hear, not interested. People who hear and made a kind of a temporary response, drift off. People who hear, keep going, but it's hard. They find it hard to keep Jesus central, hard to live a God-centered life fully. Got the people who hear and flourish and thrive. There's another sort of soil Jesus doesn't talk about. I won't do a kind of shout it out, hands up. But it's a good question, isn't it? What's missing? I'll tell you what I think is missing from this. The soil that never gets sown. The soil that seed never even falls on it. The people who never hear about Jesus. Now, he's left it out deliberately. I've not spotted a mistake. He's left it out deliberately because he's wanting to ask people, how are you responding to Jesus? But I think this is a really important category to think about. And this is why I want to move on from the parable to our responsibility, how we respond to this. Because there are a whole load of people in Lewis and around and in the UK and in the world who aren't any of those four soil types. They've never heard. No one's ever told them about Jesus. They don't know the gospel. Some people don't even know he exists. Some people know he exists, but it's just a guy or a religious person. Some people have been told all sorts of different things about him. He was just a prophet. He was a wise man. He was a teacher. I want us to think about the fifth soil for a moment or two, because this is where we really come into play. This is our responsibility. One of the things, and I talked about this a few weeks ago, one of the things that goes wrong is we kind of hear this stuff, we need to tell other people about Jesus, we want to make more disciples. And we then kind of think things like, well, I've tried that and it didn't work. That's kind of other people, more successful people than me. And that's because we're thinking wrongly about sowing seed. One of the brilliant releasing things about this parable is the farmer sows the seed and sees what happens. And one of the mistakes we make is we think, I've tried to kind of talk about Jesus to people. I've tried to introduce people to Jesus. I've shared a bit of the gospel with people, and it hasn't worked. I've been unsuccessful. I've messed it up. I've done it wrong. And therefore, after a while, most people start fairly keen and enthusiastic because it's brilliant news about Jesus. But after a while, we just get tired of it not working. And we think we're doing something wrong, or I'm messing it up somehow. The brilliant thing about the parable of the soil, parable of the sowers, is when we think about it, all we have to do is sow. It's the seed and the soil that make the difference. If we're telling them about Jesus and nothing happens, that's not down to you, is it? That's down to God and these people. If you sow it and people make a response, then it comes to nothing and you think, oh, I must have done it wrong. No, no. You sowed the seed, you leave it to God. That's the most releasing thing about this. Jesus is not saying, I want you to turn people into followers of Jesus. We can't do that. We're not a sales team, and we're definitely not a cult with all sorts of kind of pressure techniques. We just want to tell people about Jesus, and we want to see what happens. And when we understand that it's not down to us how people respond, it takes the pressure off, doesn't it? We don't have to try and really persuade, oh, thanks very much, but I'm not really into all that. No, let me really persuade you. Well, it's your response. It's your choice. Oh, okay. The big problem, I think, is not that we try and do this and do it wrong, which is what many of us feel. I'm no good. I could never. I wouldn't know what to say. That's not the big problem. I think the big problem is we're not doing it. The big problem is often we're not sowing the seed. So we're just walking around with a big bag of it. No wonder nothing's growing. Jesus thinks the same thing. In Luke chapter 10, he talks about this. In the context of using the analogy of a harvest, people coming to know him, he says, look out, the fields are ready for harvest. I think it's chapter 10, verse 2. And he asks us, ask the Lord to send out workers into the harvest field to gather it in. Jesus says the problem is not there's no one out there that's good soil ready to respond to Jesus. He says the problem is we're not out there in the fields sowing and harvesting. And I guess the big take home from this parable that I think I'd like us to hold on to is our responsibility is just to sow. That's all we have to do. Whereas we try and often work out which type of soil we're looking at. Now, I know, again, parable breaks down. You know, the metaphor doesn't work. You know, it could have been a blind farmer. That could have worked a bit better. Obviously, you'd look and think, there's the path. I won't sow any there. There's some thorns there. I'll sow it somewhere else. I get that. It doesn't work. But the point is, you don't know what's going on in people's hearts, do you? But yet, we act like we do. They would never be interested. I could never talk to them about Jesus. They would, no, they are not the sort of person. You don't know. You don't know. The Apostle Paul, his career was persecuting, imprisoning, and having Christians killed. No one's looking at him thinking, I spy good soil. Here we go. It's like, that's not even soil. That's like some sort of mincing machine that will grind the seed up and spit it out. And yet he came to Christ. Some of us here are people that people looked at and thought, never you. You'd never come to Christ. And we have. We don't know the sorts of soil we're looking at. So let's not make those kind of judgments. Let's just sow everywhere. The other one we often come up with is, yeah, I've had a little bit of contact with someone and shared a bit. Maybe they've seen me shine. Maybe I've talked a bit. But they're not ready for anything more. I've got to be careful I don't overdo it, overload it. I wouldn't want to put them off. You don't know what kind of soil people are. You don't know the people that you've had a tiny interaction, have gone away and really thought about it. And thought, I wonder if there's something here. And you're backing off because you don't want to do too much. Just sow. Just sow. Let people decide for themselves whether they want to hear more or not. If someone says to you, can you just shut up, please, and leave it? I'm not interested. Okay. That's a better clue, isn't it? Rather than deciding it for them. But one of the things we try and do often, because we're nervous Christians, nervous sowers, is we decide for people that they're not interested in Jesus. Or we decide for people they're not ready for Jesus. The parable of the sower, I think, says, just let people decide for themselves. You just keep sowing and see what's going to happen. I think that's an important difference to how we think about it. The last thing that we tend to think about in this thing when we decide is we go, I've tried it and it hasn't worked. Slow down there. Now, if I'd done my work properly, I'd have come up with a brilliant example of this. But some seeds take years to germinate. Cress, obviously, primary school classic, bang. Bit of tissue paper, bit of water, you got a forest in days. Some seed takes years, something like 10 years. Some of them have to go through a forest fire first before they can even germinate. There's a whole variety. Just because you've sown seed, shared something in a gospel with someone, and it hasn't worked, doesn't mean nothing's going on underneath the surface. Doesn't mean no one's thinking about it, no one's processing, no one's asking questions, no one's maybe even praying cheeky prayers. To say it hasn't worked is like the farmer who sows seed, goes out the next day and goes, well, there's no wheat, this is useless. Some people respond fairly quickly to the gospel. Some people take years. I know people who've come to Christ after decades and decades of people sharing the gospel with them. So we don't lose heart when we think, I've tried and it hasn't worked. I'll skip that bit for the sake of time and we'll move forward. Do you get the idea? Our responsibility, just so, just so, just so. Okay, third thing that I need to talk about, and this is the kind of getting practical side of things, is I want to bring it into real life. I want to drive it down into, okay, what do? I want to sow. I want to try sowing again. I want to be better at sowing. How do I sow? The first thing I want to be really crystal clear on is we're not going to talk about techniques or methods because that's creepy and weird. That's a kind of a sales thing, isn't it? That's the, you know, when someone rings you up or rarely these days comes round and, you know, hi, how are you today? And you're like, oh, thanks for asking. I wonder if you've ever, oh, they're not interested. And they just, have you had financial difficulties? Cool, how did you know? You know, we're not doing that kind of thing. And we're not doing the kind of, you know, I'm not trying to be funny, but you know, there's a Jehovah's Witnesses, the JWs are very keen on door-to-door stuff. And they have a kind of set thing that they go through, which often comes across as a bit weird and a bit robotic as well. We're not doing that. And none of the getting practical stuff I'm going to say, I want any of you to hear is, oh, I've got to write down the ABC of how to sow. It's not what we're doing. It's principles. It's ideas. It's things that kind of help us think about what it looks like. And that's why I'm really happy to talk about it here. I know some of us here, we're not Christians. We're looking in, examining the Christian faith. I'm not giving away any trade secrets. I'm not, oh no, he's going to tell us how we do it. No, not at all. We just want to help people hear about Jesus. A disciple of Jesus is someone who wants to love God and love people. What could be more loving to people than to tell them about Jesus, than to introduce them to this amazing God that we've talked about? It's not a creepy sales thing. It's not a recruitment drive. It's not some weird pyramid scheme where the more Christians we can get, the kind of more Christians they can get, and we can sit at the top and kind of reap some sort of weird reward out of it. We just love people, so we want them to know about Jesus. And so because there's no technique, we need to recognize there are loads of different ways for sowing. And there are loads of different ways that sowing will look like for you, depending on who you are and what your personality is like and what your character is like. Sowing can be just talking about Jesus. Sowing can be praying with someone. Sowing can be inviting people to something. Sowing can be sending people a link. Here's a video which I think you'll find helpful. Or lending them a book or a leaflet, those kind of things. Sowing can be sharing your personal experience of being a Christian. It's not, okay, I've got to go through a kind of set way of explaining the gospel. It's just something that is introducing them to Jesus. Something that is giving them something about Jesus and what he's done. It doesn't have to be the whole shebang. Doesn't have to be enough that they, you know, I've got the whole Bible now, thanks. It's just something about Jesus. And if we don't do it, the shining doesn't work, does it? Because people just think, oh, they're a naturally nice person. They're just really good at coping with difficulties. And all they think then is, I'd love to be like them, but what can you do? Whereas if we say, no, it's because of Jesus that I'm like this. It's because of Jesus that I'm coping. Because of Jesus that I respond in this way, suddenly it's like, oh, maybe that's something for me as well. I told you on the video when I wasn't here a couple of weeks ago, I read a book. The title is not an exciting book, but it was an interesting book. It was called Evangelism in the Early Church by Michael Green. It was a great big book going through, analysing how the first Christians, both the first generation of Christians that we find in the New Testament, and also the next couple of generations for the next kind of maybe 150, 200 years after that, shared their faith at a time, remember, when Christianity was kind of brand new, when hardly anyone had heard of it, when virtually no one was a Christian. And he's just asking the question, how did these people sow? How did they introduce people to Jesus? And whip it up, these are his conclusions. I found it very, very interesting. He said there's some key methods that the first Christians did. First one, it was always, nearly always, on secular ground. In other words, they didn't have big church buildings and say, we're having a great special meeting, why don't you come along? They went out to where people were, the marketplace and the workshops and the plazas and the gathering places. And they went out to where people were instead of trying to gather people into where they were. The second thing they did is it was personal conversations. It was just regular people talking a bit about Jesus, regular people praying with someone, regular people sharing something with them. It wasn't an organized kind of rally thing. We can read the New Testament, initially the book of Acts, and we can think, oh, it's all about the Apostle Paul rolls into town, sets up a huge meeting, does his amazing speaker thing, and then bingo, there's a church and he moves on. Actually, that's not the case at all. There was a few times when that happened, but the majority of it was just ordinary Christians telling other people about Jesus. Just ordinary people sowing and seeing lots of people not interested, but seeing some people respond. It was personal conversations. Third thing, it was in the home. What this means is this is people within a household who become Christians really trying to tell everyone else in the household about Jesus. And it was also people saying, why don't you come to our house to investigate Jesus? All the early Christian stuff, nearly, was just done in people's homes. They didn't have church buildings, so they met in someone who had a big house, or maybe a little house to start with and then got bigger. It was very home-based. Next one, really interesting, it was really fueled by the power of the Holy Spirit and charismatic gifts. Things like people being healed, things like prophecy, things like people being set free from chains and stuff like that. And we're going to talk all about that next week in our series. And the fifth one was church planting. When some people had become Christians, they formed a church and took it from there. What's really interesting for me when I read the book, because I knew we were doing this series coming up, and I read it when I was laid low, I was thinking, this is what we're talking about. This is the kind of shine and sow stuff. This is us just coming out into the world, sowing, having conversations, talking about Jesus, rather than organizing a big program. That's why I think I said it a couple of weeks ago. You know, we're not going to really go in for a lot of massive events as a church. We think it's much more organic, much more New Testament, just to say, how are we going to reach people for Jesus? Let's shine and sow. And on the shining thing, key attractions, this is what he also distills down from all these accounts. He says the key things that drew people to Jesus was personal transformation, looking at how people's lives had been changed. Your mate, your mother, your son, the person you worked with, they've come to Jesus and their life is different. That was a key driver in the early generations of Christianity. The second one, community life together. People saw how the early Christians were together. They were a family. They loved one another. They supported one another. They worked through difficulties together. And this was appealing. This was a place to belong despite my failings, rather than something that I had to aspire to qualify for. That was hugely appealing. In particular, it was the equality that drew people, where free people and slaves interacted as brothers and sisters, where men and women interacted as equals, where Jews and Gentiles interacted as one people of God. And the third one was enduring persecution well, which is the one we're hoping we're not going to get too much into today. When people suffered for their faith, people thought, they are really willing to go to the wall for this. They're taking the hits for Jesus. This must mean something. Shining and sowing. On this over here, attractions, it's lives that shine, community lives that shine. Over here, it's people sowing, realizing my way of making disciples is I'm going to get out to where people are, in the workplaces and the homes and the communities and the clubs and leisure activities and whatever you do with your life, and looking just to have personal conversations, to talk to people about Jesus, to be open about stuff. And it's not, this is what I mean about different personalities. It's not, I've got to go out there and say, hello there, my name's Rich, I'm a Christian, do you know the Lord Jesus? Would you like me to explain him to you? Some of you will do that. Good on you. Well, other people will think, I'm not going to do that. But the key is to think, can I sow? Is there an opportunity to sow? Can I drop something in? Can I drop in about, one of my friends from church? Or as a Christian, I think this. You know, a good example of this was the Olympics. I'm only doing this because I do love the swimming. I love the swimming at Olympics. Adam Peaty, do you remember the breaststroke legend? He's recently kind of, connected with church and discovering Christian faith. And he was brilliant in the interviews because whatever they'd asked him about, he'd always say things like, well, yeah, as a man of faith, this is important to me. As a very religious man, I'd do this. And some people were thinking, why are you saying religious? Why don't you say Christian? No, the point is, he just wanted to talk about Jesus. It was normal. It was natural for him. And he wanted to sow. And there's a lot we can learn from that kind of thing. Whatever your personality type is, shy and retiring, extrovert and bold and blatant, whatever works, can we just talk about Jesus a bit? Can we bring him in? Can we ask people questions? What do you think about this? As a Christian, I feel this. Do you have any spiritual beliefs? Have you had any spiritual experiences? How do you think about that? As a Christian, I feel this is important to me. Just normal. Because, listen, everybody else is normal about what they're interested in, aren't they? You don't get people really building up the courage to talk to you about fishing. Or I think he's ready to hear about the football. Just wanted you to know that I'm a real supporter of such and such a club. Can I talk to you about how they're doing? People, they just naturally talk about what they're interested in. The people who do, acupuncture or astrology or conspiracy theories or skateboarding or mountain biking or maths or whatever, they just start talking to you about it because they're interested, don't they? That's what we do with Jesus, just normal, natural, not weird, not techniquey, not stilted. We're just interested. And the pressure's off because we're not trying to succeed. There's a pun there, I'm close to it, but there's a pun, isn't there? There's a pun, we're not trying to succeed. Sorry? Sow seed, there you go. I knew there was something close. Very good. I wish that was mine, but thank you, Liz. We'll call it mine. We're not trying to succeed. We're trying to sow seed. Very good. We're not responsible for what happens. We just want to sow. Success is not someone's become a Christian. Success is I've told someone about Jesus. It's a different mindset, isn't it? It's a different mindset. And I think this is why the parable of the sower is so useful for us. Because it's helping us engage with people need to hear. People are going to respond differently. But let's do our bit and naturally sow. Could we just pray for a moment before we finish? If you're happy to just close your eyes, I want to pray for a moment. If you're not used to praying, nothing odd's going to happen, but maybe you want to, you can close your eyes or you can look around, but I'm just going to pray for a minute and I'm going to ask God just to drip things into our hearts and minds about what sowing might look like for us. Lord, I just want to thank you that you call us to talk about you, introduce people to you. You don't call us to change people's minds. You don't call us to success. Success is just when we talk about you. And I pray you'd speak to all of us here, wherever we're at, bold or timid, long-time Christian, new Christian, struggling, thriving. I pray you'd speak to us now and just talk to us, encourage us about sowing with other people. Amen. And let's just wait a minute. Let's just wait a minute. And see what comes up in your mind. Could be your idea, or it could be God speaking to you. Let's just hold on a minute and just listen. And God, I pray you give us boldness and courage to act on whatever you've spoken to us about this morning. Amen.